Today's broadcast was originally recorded on September 25th, 2024.
I have pledged that building a strong middle class will be a defining goal of my presidency. And the reason... But let me tell you, the reason is not about politics and it's not about ideology. From my perspective, it's just common sense. It's just common sense.
Well, there's your problem right there. You don't see the other guy calling for common sense.
I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Way down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Got some breaking news, Desi Doyen, that you're not going to like right at the top of the show.
Yeah.
My apologies in advance. Hurricane Helene is now forecast to be a catastrophic Category 4 by the time it makes landfall in Florida, I believe on Thursday.
Thursday evening is the target at this point.
In the Big Bend region right now, but a little wobble could be, well...
Could make it much worse.
Yeah, much more catastrophic right now.
So let's hope not for that.
Storm surge, as reported by CNN, could reach 20 feet. Be careful out there if you're in Florida. All right. We'll keep our eyes on that. And no matter what happens today, we will end Desi Doyen with a jaunty new satirical song that I think we could all use very much and I think you might like very much. It has to do with Project 2025. Remember that? The 900-page policy manifesto written by Trump associates and former staffers at the Heritage Foundation that he does not want you to know about. He does not want us to talk about it at all, so of course we will. The plan details all of his schemes for remaking government as his own personal fiefdom while laying off tens, if not hundreds of thousands of government workers to essentially, you know, repeal the 20th century. Anyway, more on that later. But in Project 2025, Trump's plan for the economy and especially the green economy are detailed as well. And that is where I want to begin today, as American voters seem to have little understanding of either Trump's threats to the economy itself or the Biden-Harris administration's extraordinary accomplishments in that regard, for reasons I hope to ask my guest about momentarily. Now, while Donald Trump has long held a commanding lead in pre-election polling among the electorate when it comes to who voters trust more to handle the economy, that lead has actually been cut or erased almost entirely by Kamala Harris over recent weeks in a number of pre-election polls. As AP reports in their own recent polling, Going into November's election, neither Kamala Harris nor Donald Trump has a decisive edge with the public on the economy, turning an issue that was once a clear strength for Trump into the equivalent of a political jump ball. About 4 in 10 registered voters say Republican Trump would do a better job handling the economy, while a similar number say that about the Democratic vice president, that according to new AP polling. All of that might be somewhat strange given the real economic numbers under the Biden-Harris administration. GDP at record highs, unemployment at 50-year lows, record job creation even above and beyond the restoration of jobs lost during the pandemic. Middle-class wages rising substantively for the first time in decades, inflation largely back to pre-pandemic levels, interest rates finally being lowered by the Fed, energy prices dropping, and major Wall Street indexes continuing to meet and beat all-time record highs. You kind of think the administration in the White House for all of that, of which Republicans used to love reminding us all that Kamala Harris is a part of, you kind of think they might get more credit than they have given those achievements. But, well, the price of groceries is still higher than it was a couple of years ago, and one of the presidential candidates is willing to repeatedly lie about the price of bacon, and so, well, here we are. You kind of think that a candidate like Kamala Harris in Pittsburgh on Wednesday to lay out even more specific details of her proposed economic agenda, after already detailing a number of them as part of what she describes as her opportunity economy agenda, like $6,000 child tax credits for families with newborns, $25,000 to help first-time homebuyers come up with down payments, increasing the amount of money that new small businesses can deduct for startup costs from $5,000 currently to $50,000. You might think someone like that might be running away with support for her economic agenda by now, particularly as she runs against the guy whose own economic agenda appears to be little more than, well, more tax cuts for the wealthy and major corporations, huge new sales taxes that he describes as tariffs on every single imported good, and a whole bunch of domestic ones as well, and, drill, baby, drill to somehow pay for it all, even as U.S. oil and gas production is also already at record highs under the Biden-Harris administration, for good or ill. And yet, Americans just can't decide who might have a more responsible economic plan that would help them the most. Some of the problem might be that much of the Biden-Harris economic plan is sort of hidden in long-range and, frankly, long-overdue major economic and pro-environmental packages, remarkably shepherded through a very closely divided Congress over the past 4 years, but taking a while before their effect is fully felt by the American people and across the economy overall. Also, I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that these are climate-forward projects that Americans don't yet really fully understand, but that's just my speculation, though it does allow many of the administration's most landmark projects to come under direct threat by a potential second Trump administration. As Ryan Cooper writes at the American Prospect this week, the Biden administration undoubtedly has the best climate policy record of any president in history, even granting that almost no other president even tried. President Biden and the Democratic Congress in 2021 and 22 got a shocking amount done, especially given their razor-thin margin in the Senate. The three principal laws Biden signed are the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, by far the largest climate policy package in history, and I would add not just in U.S. history, but apparently world history, at roughly between $800 billion and $1.2 trillion in size, depending on who you ask. The Environmental Investment and Jobs Act, a more traditional bill with about $500 billion for transit, passenger, and freight rail, EV chargers, and upgrades to the electric grid. And the CHIPS and Science Act, which authorizes about $280 billion to stand up a domestic advanced manufacturing industry for semiconductors and other high-tech industries, as well as funding more scientific research and much else. In addition, the administration has put through a blizzard of new regulations and standards to reduce carbon pollution, some independently and some as part of these new laws. The basic goal here, as Cooper explains, is to decarbonize electricity generation and, well, basically electrify everything. Simultaneously, policymakers would replace all the fossil fuel-powered plants already in progress with the explosion of cleaner, less expensive wind and solar power while replacing all of the fossil fuel-powered transportation, cement, steel production, manufacturing, agriculture, and so forth with electric versions. Overall, Princeton's Repeat Project report estimates that these laws get us about halfway to America's stated climate goal of a 50% reduction in the deadly carbon and other greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming by 2030, and thence to net zero emissions by 2050, writes Cooper. Yet all of those accomplishments are now under very direct threat. Should Donald Trump win another term, explains Cooper, he would likely do serious damage to this climate policy framework and potentially engender so much economic chaos that the entire planet's climate efforts would be greatly set back. On the other hand, he notes, if Kamala Harris wins, she at least will have another 4 years to cement her predecessor's legacy, and should the Democrats win control of Congress at some point during her presidency, she would get a chance to actually build on Biden's foundation. Joining us now to discuss the threats to and the promise of the Biden climate and, yes, economic agenda moving forward under, well, potentially Trump or Harris administrations is Ryan Cooper. He's managing editor of the American Prospect magazine and author of How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Questions in Politics, which is a great title. Ryan Cooper, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Glad to be here.
All right. Your article for this month's Prospect explores both the dangers of these programs, that the dangers they face under a potential second Trump administration, and the bright side of what could happen under a Harris administration. Before we delve into each, though, I'd love to sort of get your thoughts on a broader question, which is why you think that the Biden-Harris administration, and thus the Harris campaign, is not getting the credit that seems deserved, at least to me, for their economic record. And how much of that has to do with the fact that many of these landmark laws they've enacted have to, you know, involve new green technologies that I wonder if the bulk of American voters actually yet understand?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there are a number of things going on. You know, the first one possibly is that, you know, they really haven't been selling it, not now and not when it was passed. You know, you see that in the name of the law, Inflation Reduction Act.
Yes.
And though it is true that inflation fell drastically after it was passed, it essentially doesn't have anything to do with inflation, maybe slightly, by, you know, cutting energy costs by subsidizing cheap solar. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a sense that that this needed to be sort of camouflaged for some reason. Mm-hmm. And now that the inflation turned out to be so incredibly unpopular, mm-hmm. it seems that possibly the calculation from the Harris team is that there really isn't much percentage in reminding voters of that. And so they just kind of want to stick to where they know they're going to do really well, which is like abortion, mm-hmm. Trump being crazy, and spreading all these racist lies and so on. The other thing I would say is that, you know, as I write in the piece, these huge sums, you know, are spread out over 10 years. That was one of the big objectives of the laws, to mm-hmm. provide 10 years of policy certainty, so that, you know, previously these subsidy programs for wind and solar production and consumption had been, you know, sort of yanked up and down and really caused a lot of chaos in the industry because you couldn't plan long term. Well, now this is, you know, 10 years out. But one consequence of that is that a lot of money hasn't gotten out of the door yet. And insofar as this manufacturing renaissance has started, you know, manufacturing investment has almost doubled, even adjusted for inflation since 2022.
Yeah.
The factories aren't done yet. And so the workers have been hired. Don't know what kind of jobs there are, where they, you know, so it really hasn't trickled down, as it were, to the broader consciousness, I don't think.
Interesting. And by the way, they camouflage the name, even though they got no Republican votes in the end, you know, begging the question as to what sense does it make to camouflage it as the Inflation Reduction Act when it was, you know, really a climate action act, arguably. You know, as I was preparing to talk to you today, Ryan, an alert from CNN came to my iPhone reading an EV battery plant bolstered by Biden's climate law sparks hope in Northeast Ohio, but not a revival of the area's Democratic roots. Again, begging the question about why these policy successes have not necessarily translated into political success for the, you know, the party of the guy and gal who brung them.
Yeah, well, part of this is kind of intentional, you know, because the theory of political economy here was that you would spread these jobs out all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think this part was intentional, but the fact that, you know, the cheap land and so on that you need to build a big factory is generally in conservative districts, you know, rural locations, Rust Belt towns that have, you know, lost a lot of population and so on. Like, those are generally Republican locations, but it was thought insofar as those factories were built, it would create a political constituency among Republicans to keep this climate stuff going.
Right.
You know, trying to make it a bipartisan thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one wonders that after 5 or 10 years, that if this were to become, you know, like a high paying job, and above all, if those workers could be organized into unions so that they could be able to act collectively and understand why the factory is there in the first place, they might give the Democrats a little bit more credit.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't.
But it may take 5 or 10 years for that to happen. There's another point to that I think is worth noting, and I think we may have talked about it with your prospect colleague, our friend David Dayan, but the idea of these plants, these manufacturing plants for under the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Act, sort of going into all 50 states, echoes what the defense industry has done so successfully all of these years by sort of spreading out all of these, you know, munitions plants all across the country, so that when it came to cutting it, well, you know, members of Congress did not want to cut these programs because it would hurt their own constituents. Do you see that this effort on a similar track that, you know, may ultimately keep Republicans in Congress fighting to protect things that were adopted by these Biden-Harris plans?
Yeah, I mean, it has paid a little dividend in that, you know, the a recent proposal in the Republican House to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act there was a letter from a handful of Republicans, I think like 15 of them, saying that we oppose this because basically our constituents are getting a ton of money and they'd be very mad if we cut this off at the knees.
Mm.
You know, I think one of the problems with the political economy theory is that you're imagining a much more rational and grounded political party in the Republicans than actually exists. You know, this is a cult of personality driven by, you know, I mean, we're seeing it in Springfield, Ohio, a complete brain poisoned Facebook stuff is driving the conversation there. Just total fabrications. And the idea that, you know, jobs are going to sort of cause a realignment among Republicans against, you know, liberal, clean energy, Toyota Prius type stuff, I think is somewhat wishful thinking. You know, again, 5 or 10 years may be a different story, but you definitely don't see a groundswell. It's on the margins.
Well, what happens in those 5 or 10 years, of course, is going to make a big difference based on who is elected over these next 4 years. In your article, Ryan Cooper, you detail both the threat that you see a second Trump administration posing to the Biden-Harris economic and climate agenda, as well as the upsides that you see under a Harris administration, potentially. So you begin in the article with the bad news, summarized for start in this paragraph. Quote, Trump has at various points promised to repeal the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, re-withdraw from the Paris Climate Accords that Biden rejoined, revoke Biden's regulations on power plant pollution, vehicle emissions, and fuel efficiency, revoke his limitations on oil and gas drilling, and much else. The Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 blueprint for a second Trump term, overwhelmingly written by former Trump staffers and associates, is much more specific and extreme, essentially arguing for a wholesale gutting of the government's capacity to protect the environment in any way. Is that actually popular among Americans who do seem to overwhelmingly support climate action and clean energy? Or is this just another one of those things that, you know, like you mentioned in Springfield, it doesn't matter. The brain poisoning has overwhelmed any actual reality here that we're dealing with.
Well, I think it's overwhelmingly unpopular. You know, nobody wants their air and water polluted outside of a hardcore of like rolling coal truck owners. You know, nobody wants to give their kid brain cancer so that, you know, a chemical company can make more money. You know, when the EPA was created, when the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act were passed back in the 70s, it was overwhelmingly bipartisan. This was a groundswell. I think what you see there with the fact that they're willing to say this is just the incredibly biased information space in the political media. You know, ordinary people just aren't hearing about this stuff. Right. And this is something that's happened in every presidential election that I've covered going back to 2012. When you tell swing voter panels about this stuff, most of them just refuse to believe you. They won't. They're just like, oh, nobody would be that crazy. But they are.
That is kind of mind-blowing, but you're right. It underscores the fact that people do not understand this. They don't seem to understand these bills at all. Of course, it doesn't help that he calls it the Inflation Reduction Act, etc., but they don't seem to understand the connection between who is in the White House, who is in Congress, and these projects that are affecting them on the ground. It allows guys like Donald Trump, as you note, to make that promise to oil industry lobbyists that he would roll back every Biden administration climate policy if they would only donate $1 billion to his campaign. But it occurs to me, Ryan, that also works another way. As Tesla CEO Elon Musk endorsing Trump and giving him hundreds of millions of dollars to his campaign, that has largely led to a complete 180 on Trump's position on electric vehicles. Is that the solution? Should the renewable energy just, you know, try to buy Trump off with money and flattery? Can we save humanity and its climate that way? And I'm only barely joking here, Ryan.
I mean, it's worth a shot if you were to win. You know, the thing about Trump is he's got this bizarre prejudice against renewable energy, particularly windmills. He seems convinced that windmills are like killing all the birds. Uh-huh. And it seems to stem from an offshore wind project near one of his golf courses in Scotland. Yeah. He thought it was ruining the views, and he just decided he hated windmills forever. So it's certainly not something that I would rely on. But in the pinch, you know, if it's just like, well, the Supreme Court says that Trump can do whatever he wants, you can't prosecute him for any crimes, then, you know, if I'm the renewables industry,
yeah,
I would be showing up on the White House lawn with a big old stack of cash, you know, gold doubloons or something.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I was, you know, like I said, only barely joking there. And by the way, when it comes to windmills, we should note that house cats kill more birds than do windmills, as do buildings. which I'm told that Donald Trump had something to do with constructing around the country. So, you know, when you hear him suddenly worried about birds, keep that in mind. You compare all of Trump's threats here to undermine these major packages signed by Joe Biden to his promise to kill the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare during his first term. But he never did that, Ryan. Is there he never succeeded, at least. Is there reason to believe that he'd be more successful undoing these landmark laws in a second term?
Well, it's speculation. But I think that, you know, you look at the Affordable Care Act attempt to repeal it. I mean, first of all, I mean, this would have been a total disaster to throw like 28 million people off their health insurance. And it only failed by one vote.
Yep.
In the Senate.
Yep.
And that was John McCain. And John McCain is dead.
Yeah.
The Republican senators are much more extreme than they were back in 2018, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, I think that the fact that repealing, you know, chunks of the IRA, say, take out some of the renewable energy production or investment tax credits, some of that stuff that's real nerdy stuff that few people even understand or know that exists.
Mm-hmm.
If he were to repeal that, the immediate damage would not be very big. You know, it would be contained to these little towns in Republican districts that would sort of, you know, have their factories dry up again,
mm-hmm.
thanks to Republican policy. I think that if they get a Republican trifecta, especially if there's a fair number of senators, then I think it's pretty likely that at least some of this stuff would go out the window. Probably not all of it. You know, probably not the electric vehicle stuff, because that's what Tesla wants.
Yes.
But that's only a small part of it. You know, Tesla is profitable, unlike all of the other auto companies that are still trying to get over that,
uh-huh.
you know, valley of unprofitability. And maybe uh-huh. this is what Elon is counting on, to strangle the other auto manufacturing EV transitions mm-hmm. in the crib so that he can be the only EV manufacturer in a much, much smaller market.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. All right. Well, let's turn from all that potentially terrible news to, you go on to detail a number of ways in which Harris, if elected, could not only continue the status quo of these various Biden programs, but actually expand on her predecessor's record, particularly if Democrats manage to regain control of both chambers of Congress. So since I believe it's potentially the most likely, what could she do with Biden's climate agenda if she won but did not have Democratic majorities in both chambers, as you see it?
Well, in that case, she could just continue the administrative rollout of all this stuff, you know, because there's tons of, you know, rules and standards and regulations that need to be laid out. You know, that's on, like, you know, efficiency regulations, emission regulations,
mm-hmm.
And the IRS, you know, still needs to come out with some of the rules about who is qualified for these, like, production credits and investment credits, and whether you have the right number of, apprenticeships and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very complicated. And so she would have another 4 years to just, like, get that done. And then as well, another 4 years of just getting the money out the door. A lot of this stuff runs on autopilot, more or less. Like, you build the factory, you apply for the tax credit, and then you get the money back. And so this is a key point, by the way, they're uncapped,
right.
these credits that as many people can get them as actually do the activity that qualifies.
Right.
And that's different from the way they've worked before.
Uh-huh. And the way it was reported, by the way, it was, you know, I think described as a $400 billion package. It's actually a much larger package if there are more applications for this economic assistance, correct?
Right. The Congressional Budget Office, which is always doing these 10-year windows
mm-hmm.
In their estimates, and they're just guessing, and they're frequently very wrong. They just thought, well, about this many people will apply. Well, it turns out lots and lots more people are going to apply.
Right.
So other, you know, the pace is way ahead where they thought it would be. And so, you know, other analysts at Goldman Sachs and whatnot have figured, well, it's maybe, you know, up to $1.2 trillion. That's what Goldman thinks.
Uh-huh.
Others, you know, come up with a slightly smaller estimate. I mean, it will depend. It could be smaller than that if suddenly people stop applying. But having Harris in there would provide that certainty for another 4 years of, you know, getting all this stuff laid in and set up properly, get the factories going, get the people hired, and all that sort of thing.
And you report also, speaking of the length of time that this takes to happen, that under Biden, only about 17% of the $1.6 trillion that was authorized in these various climate bills and the American Rescue Plan has actually gotten out of the door as of, well, this past April. There's been some more since, but 17%? Is that ineptitude, bureaucratic red tape? Is it just the time that it takes to authorize that much new government investment?
I mean, I think it's down to the fact that, you know, they haven't been doing this sort of like massive industrial policy in a very long time. So the government is having to relearn a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who do not have enough staff are doing, you know, working around the clock to get this stuff done. The other part, you know, in addition to the fact that there have been many tens of billions of dollars in extra projects, I get emails practically every day from the Department of Energy, $50 million here, $1 billion here, $200 million there. All this stuff is going all the time. That there, you got to take into account that what I was just talking about, a lot of this stuff is not legally available. It's in the future estimates. Mm-hmm. And some of it is earmarked for future fiscal years, mm-hmm. like about $500 billion of it. Mm-hmm. So like 17% is of the total, but a big chunk of the rest of it is not even theoretically possible to have done. And so again, having Harris in there, she'll be able to do her part whenever the time does come.
And as noted, a lot of that can be done even without a Democratic Congress. But you write also about the promise ahead if Harris is not only able to win the White House, but her party is actually able to take control of both houses of Congress. What sort of projects moving forward can be done in those cases that couldn't be done without a Democratic Congress?
Yeah, you mentioned the repeat project estimate that mm-hmm. we're basically halfway where we want to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, so more or less it stands to reason that you just need to do another package of this size again. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be exactly like this one, you know, because basically we're doing pretty well on electrifying the power grid. You know, cheap solar especially is just going gangbusters.
Right.
So that's coming along, and we're getting some, you know, sort of green technology elsewhere. But where we need to work on is green industrial technology, green steel, green concrete, mm-hmm. And green agriculture in particular. That's an area where we really haven't done that much. You know, there's a lot of stuff you could do. You know, you could eat less meat. That's a big one. But that's more of a sort of consumer persuasion thing that the government doesn't have a ton of purchase on. But that's a huge category of emissions, and we're sort of barely started on that stuff. Mm. And, you know, carbon capture as well, you know, all these models, you end up net zero because they think that there's going to be the last 10% or so of emissions is going to be really hard to wring out of the system. And so it will be easier and cheaper to just suck the carbon out somehow.
Yeah, that'll work. Sure.
It might. Sure. Who knows? You know, there are models out there that are pretty simple. You know, basically you just sort of cook these particular rocks for a long time and then just leave them outside and then bury them underground. But again, you know, that's all kind of in the development stage at best.
You
know, the other thing I would say that is super important is to speed up how fast this is going. You know, we talked before about the sort of, you know, red tape, mm-hmm. sluggish government and so on. And, you know, from the local level on up to the federal level, it's just really, really hard to build stuff. And it takes forever. I talk about in the piece, there's a massive high voltage transmission line that's moving from what will be the biggest wind farm in the Western Hemisphere down to Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. You think like this is a gimme, right?
Right.
You know, drastically cut the region's climate emissions. But that line has been stuck in legal limbo, lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit for 18 years. Mm. And it's still there. They've only just started the like preliminary work. And, you know, that makes everything more expensive. You waste time, you waste money. And, you know, we got to get back that sort of New Deal spirit of like, you know, let's sort of charge ahead and like prove we can build stuff again.
Near the end of your piece, Ryan Cooper, at the American Prospect, you summarized sort of the two different worlds that potentially lie ahead based on what happens this November and as based on a recent analysis from the Energy Innovation Think Tank. You write, they examined a best-case scenario for Harris versus the Project 2025 plan from Trump. For Harris, they estimated that by 2030, she would actually beat the 50% emissions reduction target slightly and hit net zero by 2050, add 2.2 million jobs, save $7.7 billion in yearly household energy costs, increase GDP by $450 billion per year, and prevent 3,900 early deaths from air pollution. For Trump, they estimated that by 2030, he would stall out emissions cuts, meaning an increase relative to Harris by 1.75 billion metric tons of climate-choking greenhouse gas emissions per year, destroy 1.7 million jobs, increase household energy spending by $32 billion, decrease GDP by $320 billion per year, and increase early deaths caused by air pollution by 2100. Well, that seems pretty persuasive and stark. Any chance that information like that gets out to the mainstream corporate media above and beyond the, you know, the Energy Innovation Think Tank and the American Prospect, no disrespect intended, but out to the corporate media to have the effect that it seems like it should on the electorate before they cast their votes this year?
I mean, it's an open question. You know, I do not have access to the New York Times, you know, editorial headquarters where I could go and shake some sense into people. And I suspect part of the reason is that, you know, this just totally cuts against the narrative of like climate change and air environmentalism mm-hmm. over the last 30 years. You know, the way the mainstream media and the way that Republicans have certainly characterized it has been that climate change is this sort of hippie, luxury, environmental, goofy stuff that's going to harm the economy. Mm-hmm. We're going to get rid of jobs so that we can save the, you know, spotted warbler or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the truth in this case, I mean, there are certainly aspects like that. Like, let's not plow this bird refuge under to build a shopping mall. Like, that's certainly a thing that does happen. But this, we are talking about the industries of the 21st century. You know, the whole world is re-gearing everything to be around renewable energy. Now, the cheapest energy in most of the world that's ever been produced, and the whole industrial supply chain and everything, how we live, is being transformed. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's as significant, I think, it will be seen as the Industrial Revolution was in the 18th century. And so to do Trump's Brown New Deal to subsidize basically oil and gas at the expense of green energy is going to kill the economy, you know, yeah. and it's going to cut us out from the technological frontier. And we're going to fall behind China and Europe and, you know, anybody else who can see the writing on the wall. Pakistan is importing cheap solar panels by the trillions.
Yeah.
and, you know, it's just like everyone can see where this is going. And, you know, pushing against it is just it's dumb and counterproductive.
Everyone can see where it's going, whether everyone does see where it's going, particularly among the electorate, when we're talking about literally hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars in the economy with a remarkable upside. Well, that remains to be seen. And it is, as you note, Ryan Cooper, in your new piece at the American Prospect, America's climate and economy are on the ballot. The Biden-Harris administration sowed the seeds of a green American economy. A second Trump term would poison them. I will, of course, link to that article from bradblog.com. Ryan Cooper is a managing editor of The American Prospect and author of, I love the title, How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics. You can find his work at prospect.org. You can find him on the site still known as Twitter at Ryan L. Cooper. And, of course, The Prospect is there as well at The Prospect. Ryan, great speaking with you, sir. Hope to do so again in the not-too-distant future.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. All right, let's take a quick break. And speaking of Project 2025, a few thoughts on that.
Yes.
Including in Congress today from Jasmine Crockett and, oh, a song I think you're all going to enjoy. That's straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back. It's Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I promised you a jaunty satirical tune by show's end, and you shall have one. A few weeks ago on this show, I interviewed Jackie Simon, the policy director of the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE. As it is known, about Donald Trump's vows to fire tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of government employees to replace them with loyalists should he be able to win back the White House. It's an especially troubling prospect now that his corrupted, extremist U.S. Supreme Court has declared that a president cannot be held criminally liable for violating the law. Since, there are actually laws that actually protect government workers from being fired without cause. And disagreeing with Donald Trump is not considered legitimate cause for firing members of our career civil service corps in hundreds of federal agencies. While Trump has talked about plans for this on the campaign trail, much more on this is detailed in Project 2025, the 900-page blueprint manifesto published by the Heritage Foundation, written by scores of Trump associates and former Trump staffers, even though Donald Trump really, really doesn't like it when people detail what is actually in this plan. That he will begin carrying out on day one of his presidency if he is reelected. The American Federation of Government Employees has been trying to ring the alarm bells about just some of what is in Project 2025, given that they are claiming it could result in the loss of up to 1 million federal jobs, as they detailed in a recent press release over the summer. The plan, they warn, promises a takeover of our country's system of checks and balances in order to, quote, dismantle the administrative state, the operations of federal agencies and programs according to current law and regulation, including many of the laws and regulations that govern federal employment. Quote, it's a takeover of our federal government in a manner that is not loyal to the Constitution and the law. That according to AFGE President Everett Kelly, and it will force employees to take orders, legal or not, or be terminated, he warns. AFGE points out just some of what is planned here. Under Project 2025, the Department of Homeland Security would be eliminated. And the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, would be privatized. The Department of Education would be eliminated, and oversight of education and federal funding for education will be handed over to the states to do as they please. Also being gutted are regulations prohibiting sex-based discrimination in schools and discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. FEMA would be eliminated and moved to the Department of Interior or the Department of Transportation. FEMA may come in helpful in the next few days as we've got a huge hurricane heading towards Florida.
FEMA is essential every day.
But don't worry, it would be eliminated but moved to the Department of Interior, even though I should note that just a day or two ago, Donald Trump said, yeah, he wanted to eliminate the Department of Interior. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Many of their regional labs and entire offices of enforcement and compliance and scientific integrity and risk information would be eliminated, according to Project 2025, endangering public health by giving corporations and big businesses a green light to pollute the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat. The VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, is to, quote, privatize as much as possible, unquote, according to Project 2025. It should close many hospitals and clinics. This will hurt veterans who rely on the VA's expertise on illnesses unique to veterans, AFG notes. Veterans will also be talking to robots or chatbots instead of a live person when much of the Veterans Benefits Administration is automated, according to the plan. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, would be taken apart, and much of its work would be sent to states and other agencies, which is bad news for low-income and working-class families who rely on its meager assistance right now. The DOJ would lose its independence and be under direct control of the president. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, would be drastically reduced and split into two entities, one gathering scientific data and one making public health recommendations and policies. Why should those be two separate entities? Well, you can decide for yourself. The CDC would also privatize all test development and laboratory functions. Sure, that'll work out well, and focus on providing guidance in these areas instead of, quote, competing with the private sector. Let's let the private sector take care of this sort of thing. That's just a few of the things a few of the federal agencies that are going to be shut down or privatized.
And don't forget, there's also breaking up and privatizing NOAA, so you have to pay for your weather reports.
Yes, the National Oceanic
and Atmospheric Administration,
yeah.
Your National Weather Service.
Yeah, why should everyone get that thing for free?
Mm-hmm.
We should all have to pay for it, even as there are now two, count them, two hurricanes that are threatening the U.S. at this point between Hurricane John and Hurricane Helene. But yeah, everything's fine. That just gives you some idea. The issue of Project 2025 was raised today in a hearing of the U.S. House Judiciary Subcommittee on the supposed weaponization of the federal government. One of those fun new committees that Republicans put together when they took back control of the House in 2022. It was a hearing about the FBI's handling of security clearances for whistleblowers. Witnesses included former FBI employee Marcus Allen, who testified that his clearance was taken away after the FBI deemed that he was promoting conspiratorial views and unreliable information regarding the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, though his clearance was later restored. Also testifying was former Assistant U.S. Attorney General Glenn Kirshner. He testified about his concerns regarding, yes, Project 2025, if Donald Trump is reelected. As discussed in part of the questions that were put forward on Wednesday in the hearing by Democratic Texas Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett.
Mr. Allen, do you believe that career employees like yourself should have your job taken away even if you've done your job well and followed agency rules? Do you think it's right to be fired just because you have political disagreements with those above you?
No, it's not right to persecute anyone for their political or religious beliefs, especially in an organization where there's supposed to be the free flow of ideas.
Okay, I appreciate your answer and your honesty, and I absolutely agree with you. It is interesting, though, because that's exactly what Trump and my Republican colleagues would do if they won the election. It's spelled out in Project 2025. Trump would strip due process rights available to career civil servants and remove, suspend, or reduce their pay in an all-out effort to oust agency employees for partisan reasons rather than because of issues with merit or performance. And before you say Trump and Project 2025 aren't affiliated, I'd ask unanimous consent to submit into the record Trump's campaign page where he claims on day one, I'd reissue 2020 executive order restoring the president's authority to fire rogue bureaucrats, and I will wield that power very aggressively. The only reason democracy is standing strong today is because we had public servants who pledged loyalty to the Constitution and rule of law and not to Donald Trump. Mr. Kirshner, your testimony today demonstrates you're familiar with Project 2025. Is that a fair statement?
As it pertains to the Department of Justice.
Okay. On page 547, that Project 2025 states its goal of implementing a top-to-bottom overhaul of DOJ that, quote, must include the FBI, because anything less would, quote, guarantee the failure of the conservative administration's agenda. Also, this agenda includes, for example, enforcing federal criminal laws against providers and distributors of abortion medication, as well as rescinding policies that hold that sex discrimination includes discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, transgender identity, among other things. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative. On page 562, they talk about aggressively going after prosecuting, quote, providers and distributors of abortion pills that use the mail. So folks who are, you know, mailing abortion pills to women who need it, that is really not what is endangering our country or inspiring, you know, violent crime.
I absolutely agree.
So that was just a little bit of a taste from that hearing, Jasmine Crockett in the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the supposed weaponization of federal government, all of which is disturbing enough. So much so that perhaps a song at this point may help help us feel a little bit better about all of this, might make me feel better. Maybe even a song in the beloved old Schoolhouse Rock style, as recently released by Jason Kravitz, to help play us out today.
Hey there, who are you?
Oh, just the most important document in our country's history.
You mean the Constitution?
Nope.
The Declaration of Independence?
Yes, again.
The Federalist Papers?
The Federalist, what? No, even more important than whatever you just said. Now sit right here and I'll tell you all about me. I'm just a little paper for the ages. A way to set the government straight. A short 887 pages on how to make America great. Again, by forcing through the president's agenda. Removing all of those who disagree. Replacing with our loyal party members and reclaim our great country. In sum, give power to the president to authorize the government to legislate morality and wrestle back normality from Marxist ideologies that infiltrate our policies like gender, race, or anything woke. We're gonna abolish the Department of Education, turn the swearing-in into a coronation. America's great salvation will arrive with Project 2025.
Coronation? You mean like a king?
No, it's called the unitary executive theory. Gives the next president unchecked power to do whatever they want.
So, a king?
Oh, let's not get hung up on semantics. Here's how it's gonna work. Once that we've started the transition, and no one's left to tell us to wait, we'll go through every policy position, get rid of all the language that we hate, like civil rights, diversity, and unions, and pronouns to mention but a few. Defunding any liberal institutions that dare question what we do.
I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court.
Oh, the Supreme Court. That's a good one. Now, where was I? Abortion will be pretty much illegal, and reproductive rights will be gone. We'll get back to the biblical ideal that a family means a daddy and a mom with kids. Repeal the crazy climate regulations to get in the economy's way. With everyone reporting to the stations on Inauguration Day. When we give power to the president to authorize the government to legislate morality, expelling abnormality like godless ideologies, protecting inequalities like gender, race, and anything woke. We're gonna abolish the Department of Education, convert the melting pot into a Christian nation. The stage is set, we'll be going live. In 2025.
I can't seriously say all that.
Wanna bet? Come on, let's crack me open.
Page 124.
Make more nuclear weapons.
Page 257.
End the war on fossil fuels.
Page 214.
No more gun violence protection.
Page 298.
Or feeding hungry kids at our schools.
Turn to page 5.
Ban offensive books from the classroom.
563.
Make it hard to register to vote.
Page 449.
Dismantle Medicare. Kill off the the grizzly bear. Delete the term sexual orientation, gender equality, awareness of sensitivity, diversity, equity, inclusion, abortion, reproductive health, and reproductive rights out of every rule, regulation, contract, grant, and piece of federal legislation that exists. And that's an actual quote. And that, my friend, is only the beginning of how this makes America great. You'll be so overwhelmed with all the winning that you won't know what you've lost till it's too...
Wait! This doesn't sound great at all.
No?
No, it sounds like a f***ing nightmare.
Well, I guess if you wanted to, there are still some things you can do to stop it.
Like what?
Well, if you vote to save democracy and stand against autocracy, tell your friends and family, enough with this insanity. We fought too long to part with these essential civil liberties like privacy and equity and bodily autonomy and what defines a family, equality and empathy. And we're not going back, and maybe we can stop this radical abomination. The future all depends on your participation. That's the way democracy will thrive. America was made for you and me, so let's defend our freedom and our dignity. Now raise your voice and let's keep hope alive in 2025. Now vote!
Yes.
Well done.
Very good. Jason Kravitz of the Project 2025 song, and indeed, vote wisely. I'm convinced. Anyway, we got to get out. My thanks to our guest today, Ryan Cooper of The American Prospect. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Share it with your friends, your family, your neighbors, people who need to hear some truth and information. Just share it. Just get it out there. Bradblog.com. That is for free for everyone. Thanks to those of you who hit one of those donate buttons when you stop by over there. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. You can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at TheBradBlog. Come on by. Follow, say hello. Love to see you. All right, that's it. We'll see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
America was made for you and me, so let's defend our freedom and our dignity. Now raise your voice and let's keep hope alive in 2025. Now vote!
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.